technology. And before I even get started, let me ask this question of you. Whenever you are in a social gathering, away from work, and people find out where you work, what happens? Can you tell me something? Can you give me some advice? I got a ticket, right? So I guess that one of the things that we hope to accomplish through this particular class is for you to become maybe a little bit up on information, because I am of the opinion that you guys see more people, more public, than anybody else in the entire municipal court system. You have the ability to help people probably understand the law, which is why the Texas Department of Transportation has given us these wonderful grants to help us boost our educational prospects. So my presentation today has to do with this, sort of, among other things. Anybody know what this is? I'm going to pass this stuff around to you guys. I'm just going to ask you to make sure I get it back, or I'll be in real big trouble with Judge Smith in Midland. This is what's commonly known as the black box. This is found in most cars. The technical name is Event Data Recorder, or EDR. And these things were originally designed for the seatbelt deployment systems, and they were originally put into, I believe it was the GM makes first. GM and Ford have been the ones who have led the industry on these. These things have a ton of information that come out of them, and I'm going to flip through this pretty quickly because they have asked me to go quickly and let you guys go to lunch first, which I say yes. But this thing has currently been General Motors and Ford, but to get the information off of the black box, Diagnostics has the capability, the computer stuff, to get this thing out of the computer. That is basically a computer that rests within your car. This is all the junk that goes with getting that information off of the system that Bosch makes. They make this whole set of cables and so forth that then can pull this information out of your car. Now then, it's located generally in one of these two locations, under the dash or somewhere up in the dash area. Sometimes it's under the steering column. The information can be tapped while it is still in your car, but what would be one of the uses where this might actually come into play? Anybody know what this thing records? It's kind of been in the news here lately for a couple of reasons. Any ideas? Speed. Speed for what? Exactly. This is where it's really been coming to the fore, is that when there is an accident or a crash, this information has been utilized by not only who? Insurance companies, big. Who else? Who? Law enforcement, yes, those are probably the two main keepers, but there's a few others too. This information can be collected through a laptop computer that is then hooked up into it, and then it draws down the information, and then the information is then interpreted. Vehicle speed, engine speed, brake status, throttle position, and the state of a driver's license, of the driver's seatbelt switch. These things will come on like yes and no's whenever you get the report back. It just says seatbelt switch, yes, if it was on, no, if it wasn't hooked up. One of the other things that it also will interpret is the jerk of the car, in other words, the steering of the car, how fast the car has been turned during the course of an accident. And also the airbag, of course, and airbag deployment information. This is very small. You can't really see it. That's why we're going to kind of whip through this. But this is essentially what it would look like if you got a printout of that information that has been downloaded from a car. This tells you from the point of impact, which is at the very top, down to when the car finally comes to arrest, the speed of the car. This has all kinds of little information in it about what was on, what was not on in the car at the time of the crash. More, obviously, tons and tons of information. And in your book, it's probably so small you'd be going blind if you even tried to read this. If anybody has any interest in getting a copy of this PowerPoint presentation, I'm always willing to hand it up. You can have it. You can look at it. Take it to your own computer and see everything that was on here. Because it is kind of interesting to see the stuff that they collect. So we have the automobile manufacturers using this information. It was originally put into cars so that they could determine what was happening during the course of accidents and to also help them defend against some of those lawsuits that might come up. Who's had the most notorious lawsuit that's come up with regard to perhaps wanting to get this information out of their car? Toyota. Now, let me tell you something about that. Toyota has historically said that they don't have this information in, they do not even have these in the car, or if they have them, they're only usable for just very limited amounts of information. Well, we have learned through that whole braking incident that that isn't exactly the case. They have a whole lot more information that is available. In fact, they had a resource of information that said quite a bit about the one guy who supposedly had the accident, but does anybody know what the end result of that was? It seems like he had been braking really hard. He was going really, really fast and then braking really, really hard just to basically test the system and then ended up having a crash. Of course, then sued Toyota. And so Toyota is actually on board with one of these, even though they have historically said they are not. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has done a number of studies with regard to this instrument, and they have made a proclamation that they want all cars in the United States to have one of these installed by September of 2012. It was originally 2011. It has now gone to 2012. Insurance adjusters using this, obviously, for purposes in accidents, trying to determine maybe who was at fault or how much at fault. Thank you. Vehicle fleet managers. These are the guys who are in charge of the big trucks, the 18-wheelers out on the highways. Big, big use in these in the 18-wheelers. They are able to pull all kinds of information, throttle speed, and they're able to gather information that not only tells them whether or not the driver is driving safely, but it also tells them if the engine is operating efficiently so that they can keep their numbers, their profitability up on the highways with regard to 18-wheelers. Accident reconstructionists. These are the guys who, some of them are hired out individually. Many of them are within police departments. And they are very technically savvy with regard to this information. And, of course, law enforcement. There are just a few others. There's a case that we'll be talking about here if we are able to get to it that fast. But there are some others who actually use this, and one of them is some of the federal agencies have tried using it, but they were actually defeated when they were trying to get it entered into a probable cause affidavit to go forward in a case. So where can you buy this thing? Well, Bosch Diagnostics. It is not cheap, needless to say, to get the information. This is the ability to get that information out of your car. Okay? So does anybody know what the big argument about this is? The ACLU has made some rather large arguments about this particular instrument. Got a clue? Unfair. ACLU is saying that it could be unfair. Is it being used against us as consumers? One of the quotes that I saw was, "I don't think I want a car that rats on me." You know, and really, you kind of think about that, it is true. So these things are not cheap. The $549 annually so that they keep everything updated and also synchronized. Yes, ma'am? Can employers use this? Absolutely. An employer can do just about anything they want to do if they have you, if you're a private organization. That's kind of, especially in Texas. Now, there are some states where that's not necessarily the case. But yes, there are many employers, particularly with the trucking companies, that use these. And my understanding is that some of the rental companies are also using them, as you can imagine. Do they have to make you aware of the fact that they are using it? That's a very good question, and I think it would probably still be up in the air, but if the company owns the vehicle, the argument generally would be they get to put anything they want to on it, and you're subject to it. And usually in all that fine print in a rental car agreement, there are all kinds of things in there that you don't even know that you're signing off on. Okay, so the next one we're going to go to. Here's where our glass, okay, y'all are the lucky ones over here. Y'all get to have first shot at this. This is called the sniffer, and I'm shining it up so I don't blind anybody, because I have done that before. It just didn't really dawn on me, just to be very honest. This is a flashlight, as you can see, but it is called the sniffer, and this little thing here will essentially, when it is brought over alcohol, oh, here. Sorry. That isn't very nice, is it? Let's see if it's going to work for us. There we go. You can see these little bars that are on, and they will go. It's sniffing this alcohol that's just in the cup here. So I'm going to pass this one around. Y'all can play with it. Try not to kill anybody with it. I think you can actually make it work even without, because here's essentially, you know, a police officer. It's on right now. You punch this button to make it actually activate. A police officer uses these. These are being used in probably over 40 of our 50 states at the moment. And they are extremely useful for officers out on the highway for a number of reasons. First of all, what else can that thing be used for? A what?
Is it just for alcohol?
No, well, it's a flashlight. And it sniffs alcohol. What else?
Beat somebody.
A club. Yes. Those are actually, you know, that is one of the things that police officers utilize those big flashlights for, is because it is also has been a weapon when they need to defend themselves in certain instances. Yes? How accurate is this little deal? Well, it's pretty interesting. It's run by a little heat-generated pump. And the heat-generated pump is, you're supposed to get these things calibrated every year. But the calibration is part and parcel of owning one of these, and I'm not entirely sure what the whole calibration process is. As far as it's being able to, you'll see this whenever, hopefully it'll get back to you at some point. Okay, now y'all quit hanging on to that wine. what I was going to say is this thing, whenever you see what it does, it really zooms up. I mean, it's just like multiple bars of evidence that there is alcohol present. So it's only a factor. In other words, the accuracy of it is really not the big issue. What they use this for is an officer walks up to the car after a stop, and he has the flashlight, whether it's nighttime or not, you know, because you can use it both ways, and he clicks the little button, and while the driver is talking, he kind of looks in the car, you know, and just kind of casually, however, if he's got his flashlight on at night, however the case may be, and it will detect alcohol within that vehicle space. So all it is to determine whether or not alcohol is present. Now then, this thing was, like I said, just generally a probable cause factor. So the accuracy of it has been tested. Whether or not it can be used in a court setting, yes, it can, but only as a factor, just a factor to get there. These have been very effective and useful for officers determining that perhaps there is alcohol involved and then the subsequent arrest that might follow. It can detect the alcohol in closed areas, and of course it can detect open beverage containers. All right, so it works, as you can see, as it comes around. This little pump will run, and then the air sample will show the bars as it generates the smell, because it is literally sucking in the alcohol smell and then interpreting that into the form of those little bars that are going to show up. It has to be held at least 6 to 8 inches from a person's mouth, but it will detect alcohol within the compartment of the car, particularly, like, let's say, in the wintertime, whenever everything is closed up, all the windows are closed. Wind, of course, carries away some of that smell. And the little LED bars, we've talked about those. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and pass the next one around. Now, the alcohol, I'm going to hand this one to you from this end, and we don't have another glass of alcohol to hand out. But you'll get the general idea and drift by just the way that this stuff works. This is the Clipmate. This can be used by police officers. It can be used in court settings. Any one of these could be used in court settings, for that matter. Let's say that, let me just ask the choir. How many of y'all have had an individual walk into your court that you know is inebriated, drunk? Yeah. See, there's never a dull hand whenever I ask that question. So we all know that we have them. Now then, are you supposed to take a plea from a drunk, from someone who is not really all there at the time? Are we supposed to take a plea from anybody who's drunk? I see heads shaking. No, correct. Why? Because what? They're not in the right state of mind. Are they able to make an intelligent decision about their plea? That's really the bottom line, you know. Now then, in the reality of it, do we have anybody come around and actually test people in our courts to find out? No, we're usually just kind of just shuffling people on through. There have been occasions in Lubbock where we have had the marshal come and make determinations of whether or not the person might be too intoxicated to make a knowing plea. And I would suggest to you that, you know, sometimes those folks can also get a little combative. And if you don't have someone who is secure around your court, remember we're dealing with lots of money, you might just always want to have a handle on to somebody in the police so that you can always have at least, I feel secure. I want you guys to always feel secure. So anyway, this is the pass clipmate. This one works on a power button up here. Has a little indicator here. Whenever you put this over the alcohol, this bar right here, you can actually hear this one whenever you punch this button. It's a white button on top, and you can hear it drawing in the air. So if you've been drinking this morning, you can just put it up to your breath, and maybe it'll go ahead and record. Actually, y'all will meet in the middle with this thing, and so y'all already have the idea of what happens. Yes? Well, mouthwash set it off. What do you think? I say yes. Now then, let me tell you why there are some things that are factors that make this a bit problematic because of other residual alcohol, which is what comes from a mouthwash that has alcohol in it, right? Because it has to have alcohol in it to even be indicated by this thing. And there are many mouthwashes without alcohol in them. So that's a first factor. What about if you had just even sprayed one of those little mouth sprayers, like a breath freshener in your mouth? I think it would pick that up if it has alcohol in it. You always have to know if there's alcohol in it. What about a big old broken bottle of perfume in the car? You know, somebody, you've heard of the stories of the drunk who gets stopped and they spill the perfume everywhere in the car. It's still probable cause. The officer gets to use his discretion on whether or not he wants to pull you out of the car and go ahead and do the testing, because that would be sort of a big red flag that might go up, and so you might still be pulled out. But I do think that a spilled bottle of alcohol could very likely be picked up. But as I said before, this is just one factor to be used towards going to the next step, taking them out of the car, asking them either to take a portable breath test or one of those things. And the sobriety tasks. So these can be used, and this one is really handy at school functions as well. I've heard of some of the schools using these and the flashlight for trying to detect kids who might be using at school, which I understand is a huge... Let me give y'all a little fact here. I just read a document that said that by the time that a child reaches senior in high school, 70% of all of those kids have tested some form of alcohol or drugs in that time frame, by the time that they're a senior in high school. 50% of all of those kids have used within the last month of questioning. You know, those are kind of staggering statistics, particularly when you think about the fact that a teenager's brain is developing. Our brains are developing between, let's say, birth and about 23 years of age, which, by the way, is also why the drinking age was set at 21. Because if you ingest alcohol and or drugs into a developing brain, what is it going to do to it? It'll kill the cells. It actually dissolves. Alcohol is a solvent, so it will dissolve. And they're learning something else about marijuana use. They're learning that the kids who are really sucked into marijuana use right now are more likely than not to be unable to quit. I mean, although marijuana has never been deemed to be addictive per se, that if these kids are using it from a young age, they have a harder time getting off of it because their brain has kind of like programmed itself, I guess, to believe that it needs it. So there's a whole lot of stuff about this that I think is kind of a fascinating thing, and I know that y'all get an opportunity to talk to a lot of people. I would suggest to you that some of these courses that we're getting to teach now in TMCEC are so useful for just spreading the word to other people. I've got another one to tell you about here in just a minute that still just makes my hair curl. These are used in workplace applications. They can be used in all kinds of applications, but of course in the workforce, we're getting more and more accustomed to drug testing as we are with the government. These can be used at checkpoints. Pardon me, my nose, I've got something's making me sneeze all morning long. I don't know if it's the heat or what, so forgive me for keeping on with my nose here. I do have a Kleenex, and perhaps I should just go ahead and grab it. These have been extremely useful, both of these. These are both called passive alcohol sensors, and they're extremely useful in just determining whether or not there's an alcohol-impaired driver. I'm getting there. Be patient. The cost of them is coming up. Okay, so a FRI hearing in Illinois basically determined that these can be used. They are scientifically approved to be used as a factor in a court setting. The admissibility in court, yes it is, but it is up to the judge whether or not they want to allow it in. As far as the overall background is concerned, they can be used as just a factor. The residual mouth alcohol, the mouthwash incident, that's one of the problems that does come along with it. Environmental effects on the sample. That's when the wind is blowing over it. Needless to say, that's going to whip out here in West Texas. For those of us who live here and who, let's see, I think Sunday in Lubbock, we had a huge, huge dust storm. I mean, it was zero visibility out where I live. And there would be no way one of these things would work in that setting. I just don't know how it could because the wind was blowing so hard. False readings from other sources. That would be the perfumes. That would be other things that might be in the car. Is it an illegal search? No, it has been determined that it is not. Now, here we go for the question of how much does this thing cost. $695 is what either of these essentially is about the same cost. They do have a calibration charge that you're supposed to, if you do it like they say you're supposed to do it, then the calibration charge would come in. And it is a rather handy piece of equipment, and for $695, if you needed it for whatever the application may be, it could well be worth it. GPS. We all pretty much know what GPS is. How many of y'all have the OnStar system in your car that, okay, I see a couple of hands going up. I have it, but I'm not willing to pay for it, so I've kind of been a little bit stingy on that deal. But where else do we have GPS? In our phones, which has been really in the news with regard to Apple in particular. Because these GPS systems, and as a matter of fact, if you have a phone that downloads apps, I would suggest to you that you might want to check your settings, because I learned on my phone that there were a number of these applications that I have in my phone that had GPS that automatically was turned on whenever you downloaded the application. You can go into your settings on most of your phones and disconnect that. It'll also speed up your phone. That's what I was learning. It was just dragging the phone down significantly. But there is a lot of GPS being used right now. It was originally a military development, and the Department of Defense did develop it. It is working off of satellite functions. I don't know if this is news to anybody. I think these have been around for so long, I don't think that it's big news. But, you know, whenever you're using your little in-car, what are those things called? I don't have one. What are they called? Yes. The Garmin GPS system, or any one of those. How do it know where you are? Well, essentially, the way that it does know it is that whenever you buy one of those, you are essentially allowing the company to utilize the access to your car through that satellite. So you are being positioned, and that's why it can literally, like your phone, if you have that little map application, you can watch yourself move. You're literally being tracked. You know, and I guess that there's a concern out there about, well, is this good, is this bad? What do y'all think about it? I say this, if I'm not doing anything wrong, what difference does it make? Really, you know? But then again, if you had an evil force who had access to these things and wanted to use it against us, I don't know, you know? I think it's really a debatable issue that we have in our society, but it's these things are really becoming more and more and more a part of our society and definitely a part of your new cars that you're buying. Because whether or not you have OnStar, you probably could still be attached to one of these systems. I should say possibly be attached to one of these systems. Pardon? Can you disable it within your car? I don't think you could disable it within your car unless you were real. Well, that's a good question. I think you would have to ask your car manufacturer if you wanted to have it disabled. And then they might tell you, well, it's really not, we don't have anything following you. You don't have anything that's always on. So, you know, the car industry is a little bit on, it's kind of interesting. The car industry has had a large hold on the industry. A lot of them have obviously taken the hike because of some of their ill use of things that they have done or maybe the money that they've made. But there are a lot of things that sometimes a car manufacturer, especially if you live somewhere where you have a good relationship with your service department, talk to them about it. See what they say. I've got a the person who ran into a, she ran off the road, ran into a ravine and was there for like 3 days. Yes, and then they finally located her through, essentially, I think that came from a phone, because, you know, you can extrapolate through phones positions of where people are. And before her phone died, somebody had gotten a call, and somehow or another they were able to pull this information. It's fascinating. The whole system is, all of these things are fascinating. This is the case that I was talking about. The government tried to track using OnStar Global Positioning with a rented vehicle, and they were trying to catch a drug dealer. That this case was essentially washed out because they had not gotten enough information for it to be a valid search warrant. And so it's a, there are some issues with it. If a law enforcement agency is using one of these, they have to have a search warrant to be able to put it in there with enough information to even get that search warrant. So we can determine the speed of a vehicle, which, of course, is what the GPS, Garmin, some of those things do, as well as your phones, tracking probationers. Has anybody heard of this being used with probationers? Please tell me who has and where are you? Where are you located in Texas? There is a judge, a JP, who has been using, he's used a, it's an ankle bracelet, actually, and I've got one of those up here, too. He's used an ankle bracelet to track curfew violators. Which I think is kind of fascinating, personally. I think it may be picked up a little bit more. We can track vehicles, the lost, stolen vehicles, crashed vehicles, people who are lost. There have been several alerts on older people who have Alzheimer's. I've heard about two or three of those in the state of Texas where the person disappears in a car and they're eventually able to locate them through one of these systems. Which is why I say, sometimes I think they're in there and they just don't tell us until it's a situation where we really have to know. Portable breath test. Okay, I've actually got one of these and I'll show it to you. I'm not passing this one around for a couple of reasons. Supposedly, it is extremely expensive. This is what it comes in. It's called LifeLock, and it operates on a fuel cell, too. You essentially attach these little plastic thingies and have the person blow into them. And the little stems that you put in there are actually quite expensive. But you have to have enough air in them to make the thing work, but they will very accurately determine what someone's breath alcohol content is. These also have the little fuel-generated cell. The electrical current is then translated into the concentration of alcohol that might be involved in that person's mouth. So we can use it. It can be used in passive mode. They can actually do it where it can just breathe the air in, but the most productive result is whenever they blow into the tube. $535 bucks for these. I don't know of many courts who actually use a portable breath test. Most of, at least at our place, if we ever have something that's really a question, we call in the police department, and then they bring over whatever they have. So we don't actually have it in the court, although there may be some larger courts who actually have this. So we have to have clear instructions when you're using one of these. These can be used in court, by the way, but there have to be clear instructions as to what to do when you are blowing into the instrument. And you have to give the machine 15 minutes to clear before you can go to the next one. These are used on the roadside. Youth underage drinking. I have heard of these being used within the school system, once again. This has been a big application for this. I've, as a matter of fact, seen some police reports where they did tests on kids at school in Lubbock that they suspected were drinking, so then the kid ends up with an education code violation for public intoxication on campus. That's been sort of a going thing in Lubbock here recently, it seems. Probationers obviously are required to utilize these when they check in with their probation officer a number of times. And this can be used as a factor, once again, for evidence in a trial setting. Are they admissible? Yes, they are, making sure, of course, that they were used properly. The residual mouth alcohol is what is determined. Now, the whole mouthwash argument, again, can come into play. Is it an illegal search? It has been determined no, it is not. Okay, now then, the scram. I'm going to just ask, anybody have a clue what this means or any idea what it is? Let's think Paris Hilton or Lindsay Lohan. You kind of get where I'm going here? I will pass this one around because I think these are kind of fascinating. They're fascinating in that I would never want to wear one. Let's just say that. They're not attractive by any stretch, but they get around your ankle and they essentially work off of sweat. This can be tested every 30 minutes, and it transmits back to a receiver usually. This is an older one. There are some that are actually smaller and much more efficient. There's all kinds of different ones of these, but this particular model has been used in a number of incidents. And, of course, there it is on a lovely setting for a good outing to have it strapped to your ankle in your dress, which I find fascinating. I think I'd be having pants on, personally, if I had to wear the darn thing. And the scram too. So we've got probation and parole. They're the ones who mainly use this particular instrument. This is also the one that has been used in some of the truancy stuff. Domestic violence people, this is one of the things that they've used these monitors for, particularly when a person who has had a domestic violence issue, there may be a restraining order out there, and then the judge decides to lift the restraining order. And if the person who is the abuser will wear one of these, and then if they then violate by drinking too much alcohol, which is usually what prompts abuse in the home, then the person could then be thrown back into custody or the restraining order reenacted. And, of course, underage drinking, bonding companies using these things. Okay, this one. This is a lot less expensive. I think that's why the judge decided to use it for truancy cases. And the truancy monitor is a GPS monitor, by the way. It is not a alcohol monitor so much. So there are two different kinds. You've got a bracelet that you can wear that monitors where you are, and those are being used quite frequently with probationers. This particular is the one that, the SCRAM is the one that is the alcohol monitoring system. Yes. I think you've got that on a slide. If you need me to go back, I'd be happy to. Well, you're renting them, right? And I presume that, and you asked, is it just $84 per week? I believe the way that this works is that you are renting the unit because it's never intended to be permanently used. Now, what happens whenever you want to put it on a different person? I'm not real sure. Do you have to get it reset by the manufacturer? I really am not entirely positive about this. But what generally happens with one of these is the cost is put onto the defendant. Okay, so that's where the cost generally lands. Okay, you bet. The eyeglasses. This is another one that's kind of interesting, and we had, let's see, we may or may not still have them in here, because these don't work. If they do, they don't work well. Here they are. This is essentially what we're showing in that picture. They are, I don't even think there's a battery in those things, because apparently I haven't used them. I haven't attempted to use them, but Judge Smith in Midland bought these, and he said that they're really pitiful. I mean, you couldn't really see whatever's coming off of them, although I have heard that there are some that are much better than this particular brand of whichever one this is. There are also pens with video surveillance in them now, where you can essentially have a pen attached to your lapel pocket, and you can be viewing whatever's going on. And, of course, our phones are another source of recording. These things have a 640 by 480 resolution, which isn't great, but supposedly that's what the manufacturer says about them. Robin says it's not very good at all. And it tracks all kinds of things here. We'll flip right on through this one. The cost on this is $120 to $200, and they even go up from that now that they've got some more advanced technology in them. Okay. The driver alcohol detection system for safety. Okay, what is it? Come on, this one's easy. Yes. Ignition interlock is essentially what it is. And this particular system is usually used, obviously, with the drivers who have been convicted of driving while intoxicated. There are some car manufacturers right now, which this is for those of you who have asked questions about inside cars and so forth. It's amazing what they're thinking about putting into cars these days. And one of them is an automatic alcohol detection system that would keep you from driving if you are too intoxicated. One of the problems that has come up with this, there's also an optical scan. Anybody know why you might have an optical scan on some of these? There are a couple of different systems that have this particular sensing in them. Anybody know about the nystagmus? Yes, thank you. Eye nystagmus test, whenever you're getting, and I had a friend who I went to high school with who had dinner with us last night who decided to rat on me about a story that we came over to Odessa. I lived in Midland. I graduated from high school in Midland. Came over to Odessa because this was what we called Midland's playground. We'd always come over here and have fun. And it was myself and two girlfriends on our way back. I was the designated driver. I will tell you, I had a couple of beers. I'm just going to go ahead and own up to it because this was back in the 70s, all right? And it's not an excuse. I'm just saying that I had had a couple of beers, but I was watching it because I knew I was driving. So I'm driving back, and we get stopped by a state trooper who then decides that he's going to go through all the tests. So Mary was going on and on about this. Well, the eye nystagmus test is really fascinating because what it does is you follow that pin. You've seen the whole thing where you track the pin, and the officer tells you to keep your eyes on the pin, so you're supposed to follow his finger or the pin. And when if you have an alcohol level in your system that is high, or drugs in your system that is high, your nystagmus is a huge indicator that you are impaired, because your eyes will literally bounce. And if you ever get a chance, ask your officers to let you watch one of these be done, maybe at your holding facility or your jail, whatever. Fascinating to watch this, because your eyeballs will literally just bounce wildly. There are some people who have a natural nystagmus, so there are some issues with regard to that. But the optical scan, these alcohol sensors that have the optical scan are kind of interesting. They say that sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. I don't know. And then you're trusting the person who's in the car to do it and not have the passenger try to do it. You see what I'm saying? Transdermal test, that's another sweat factor. And then, of course, the odor senses. That would be where you blow into something. These two brands are the Nissan and the Saab. Actually, the Saab is talking, one of the ones talking about putting this permanently into cars. Okay, before I get to this, there is another bit of technology out there that I think is probably going to be one of the most talked about. Whether or not it ends up being used widely, I don't know. I think parents would be wise to really think about it. It's a device within a car that will literally not allow cell phone function while you are driving. It's interesting because it literally blocks the signal. And, you know, you think about it on some levels, you know, is there really anybody so desperate that you have to talk to while you're moving down the hallway, I mean, down the highway? Apparently your phone will still indicate that a call might have come through, but you can't talk to them, you can't text, nothing can be sent out. So you essentially have to pull over, put the car in park to be able to make the, to be able to make a call, text, do whatever it is that's needed. I think it's a great idea because texting has become such a hot topic with regard to all the accidents. None of us, I think, are immune to driving down the highway and having the person in front of you weaving or, you know, doing the excessive braking and acceleration because they're too busy working on their phone. Or I saw one yesterday, not yesterday, but day before yesterday, who almost slammed into the back of a car because he was too busy working on his phone. This is one of the facts that I'm going to go over, and then we're just about done. Teenagers, youthful drivers, if you have a male passenger sitting in a car, a teen youth passenger, and you have a teen driver, the likelihood of an accident, first of all, just any male or female passenger, the likelihood of a fatal crash goes up significantly, like by two times. If you have two teen passengers in that car with a teen driver, five times is the likelihood of a fatal crash. I'm just here to tell you, these statistics are just staggering. They're frightening, frightening, frightening. Fatal crashes due to non-use of seatbelts has diminished drastically. We've also seen a diminish in alcohol-related fatalities in driving because of all the education that's come around. So I guess my bottom line on that is talk and try to get the point across. If a male passenger's over here, by the way, the likelihood that there is going to be speeding in that car goes up another 20%. It's just a strange, I think it's got to be an ego factor somehow or another, but it's just interesting. Okay, here we go. This is
Stupid Videos.
The Trunk Monkey Theft Retrieval System. Because sometimes getting your car back is simply not enough. Another revolutionary idea. You'll only find at Suburban Auto Group. Pending approval from the Department of Agriculture.
Oh, you guys, thank you. I hope you have a great lunch. It's down around at the bar, which is over by the restaurant. Thank you.